This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is a special edition iFanboy podcast on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. And little man, little Lola wants you. Make up your mind to have.
Make up your mind to have.
No regrets.
Hello, welcome to a special edition iFanboy podcast on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Paul Montgomery.
Hey, folks.
And we are from iFanboy. We talk about comics every week on the Pick a League podcast, but we like to come in for some special shows when things happen that are worth talking about. And we thought the pilot episode of the newest Marvel TV show was worth talking about. I guess it's the first Marvel TV show. I guess if you want to use Marvel
Live Studios, action, certainly,
Marvel
yeah.
Studios as your barometer. There have, of course, been other Marvel TV shows over the years, but this is the first Marvel Studios TV show taking place within the Marvel movie universe. We thought that was worth exploring, so we're going to do that. There will be spoilers, so if you haven't seen the episode, there's no way to talk about it without talking about spoilers. So if you are worried about that kind of thing, pause the show, come back after you've seen it. It's on, well, I'm sure you can watch it on the ABC app or wherever you want to watch those kind of things if you haven't seen it yet. But Paul has been writing over at MTV Splash Page blog, and Paul, you wrote a review on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so I thought I'd start off having you give your thoughts because I'm still thinking. I saw it when it was on, obviously, and I saw it again this morning. Although it was really more on in the background as I did things around the apartment. But I'm still formulating my thoughts, so why don't you kick us off?
All right, leave it to the professionals here. Yes. Okay. You can go over to splashpage.mtv.com every Wednesday morning and check out my review of the newest episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I have to write it out that way every time I name it, with quotation marks.
That's right.
And the goddamn little dots. I hate acronyms. I hate them.
Just do copy and paste.
Can we all agree just to say S.H.I.E.L.D. in all caps? It's fine.
Copy and paste.
I did do that. So I watched this. I watched this with my dad last night, who's a big fan of the Marvel Studios movies and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And he got some good laughs out of it, enjoyed himself. Then I had to stow away with my laptop and write all night long. I wrote about 1,500 words on it. And I'm still mulling this one over. This has a lot to answer to. Mm-hmm. And you know, the episode opens up with shots from, you know, the Avengers and, you know, some of the Iron Man movies and everything. And we see all the iconic stuff like Cap's shield. We see Mjolnir and it's all there. And then we go into this other thing and we have to kind of get used to a TV budget for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, I think that was probably the most noticeable thing was that. I mean, if you look back at the Avengers, which I did recently, I did actually 2 days ago, I watched it again while I was home. And even though like most of that movie's shot on a set, which is basically the set of the helicarrier and the rest of it shot in front of a green screen that was not New York, this felt very much like a much smaller world because it was clearly shot on a backlot, except for the part in Paris out of nowhere. It didn't feel real in terms of the world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It felt like, okay, they're shooting on the ABC.
I would say especially that opening with J. August Richards as Michael Peterson, the hooded hero, and his son, you know, looking in a window at the New York Warriors or whatever they're calling them. Heroes, they're not called the Avengers.
Heroes, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and it's, you know, it's got that that street lamp and the brick facades and everything, and you're like, yeah, okay. And so right away it's kind of asking a little bit of your suspension of disbelief, but that's fine.
Yeah, you know, we have to accept that as a TV show, it's gonna have a much
smaller budget. Yeah, we got through Smallville's Metropolis, and
Smallville had two city blocks to work with for the entire, you know, last four seasons. But you get over that. I mean, I didn't certainly noticed it. It just felt different, but. I mean, the other thing I noticed was that even though Joss Whedon was a writer, he was only one of three, and it didn't really feel like a Joss Whedon-written show.
It didn't. Okay.
I didn't think it felt as snappy. There was moments of it, clearly, but it didn't feel quite as you know, Joss Whedon certainly has his faults, and I haven't loved everything he's done, but he can write very well. I loved Avengers, and I've loved, you know, Firefly and things like that, but it didn't really feel as the dialogue didn't seem to crackle as much.
Does it? As to me, I think it's, and this is also written that the showrunners are, and you know, Joss Whedon's going to be in absentia for a little bit because he's working on Avengers 2, you know, the Age of Ultron. So it's his younger brother Jed Whedon, and his fiance, his wife.
I think so. Yeah,
Marissa Taron.
Marissa
Tancharian, I'm sorry, and they're working on it, and it feels a little bit like Whedon light, like aping early Buffy kind of stuff, and that, you know, the quippiness and sort of the self conscious jokes, like backtracking on jokes, like saying things and realizing, oh, I can't believe I just said what I said.
Right.
Most of that from the Sky character, and the very weird Fitzsimmons entity, which is like these symbiotic Scots who
I love those two characters.
I like them too, but like it's very clearly like a Whedonistic kind of idea.
Well, let's backtrack just real quickly just to give an overview of what the episode was about. It's pretty straightforward. This new hero appears in the scene who is played by Joss Whedon alumnus J. August Richards, is his name?
Mm-hmm. He's in Angel.
Right. And so S.H.I.E.L.D. mobilizes to find this guy before bad people get to him. In the meantime, they're recruiting a new agent. And also there's a mysterious group called the Rising Tide dogging them on the internet. And it all sort of comes together at the same time with the new agent teaming up with an agent of Rising Tide, or was she all Rising Tide? I wasn't quite clear if she was an agent of Rising Tide.
Sounds like she's all Rising Tide. Like
too,
she just ran it out of her van.
Right. When did she shower and make her hair look fabulous? Living in a van. So they all come together as they track down this new hero, and it comes to a head. We also have the return. We have a brief appearance by Maria Hill, who Colby Smulders, who's on another TV show. So she won't be on it that much, if at all. And then the return of Agent Phil Coulson, Paul's favorite character. But we'll get to Phil Coulson, I think, that whole mystery in a bit. But that was the overall plot. It was fine. I saw people complaining that it wasn't big enough. And, you know, it's a TV show. And I don't use that as a diminutive, because TV is great right now. We're in a golden age of TV. But, you know, they're not going to fight the Chitauri every week. And they're not going to fight Galactus every week. And it's going to be small stories about characters. And I think that's okay. I think this is the place to tell those stories. You know, you can have the giant New York City spanning battles in the movies. In the meantime, this can be about S.H.I.E.L.D. running around doing stuff in the shadows, which I think is, you know, perfect for a TV show.
This is sort of like the Frontline series. Right. You know, it's like, is that what they were called? Like the minis that would run alongside Civil War and
Civil
similar
War
big events. And but the idea is sort of like, this is the ramification of living in a world of gods or giants. It's just how they put it. You know, the advent of the Avengers and alien invasion and stuff like that. And how do you cope with that? And now there are powers out there in the world. And spoiler for this episode, Extremis is involved.
Which was a nice twist. I didn't see coming at all.
Yeah, handily on the same day that Iron Man 3 comes out on DVD and Blu-ray.
I've got it right here on my table. So you find out that the main hero and someone else also were infected with a sort of a cocktail of super soldier serum, gamma radiation, Extremis, and all kinds of things to try to manufacture superheroes, and that's how they have their powers, and it all goes very horribly wrong, as these things tend to do. But it was a fun little. There were a lot more references and callbacks to the movies than I had expected, with also little explanation. You know, they never really said what Extremis was, which I don't have a problem with. It was interesting that they sort of gave you that, that leeway as a viewer to understand.
I wonder if there are people who are watching this show and they're like, "What the hell are they talking about?" Like, I didn't watch that Avengers movie, that little low budget indie flick. But I think they just expect that people are really into the Iron Man movies and Avengers and everything, and let's continue that story, and we don't have to do a lot of backtracking. And I kind of appreciate it. I hadn't thought about that until you mentioned it. But
so who would you? So let's go over this, the characters, the cast, and everything, and discuss that. So the leader is obviously Phil Coulson, Agent Phil Coulson, everyone's favorite. And then you've got new guy Grant Ward, who is sort of the badass field agent, and Melinda May, played by Ming-Na Wen, who is the reluctantly out of, I don't want to say retirement, but out of desk duty field agent, who is also a badass, but she's a little weary of being back in the field. Then you have Fitzsimmons, who is two different people, Fitz and Simmons, who are the tech guy and the biology guy. It seemed like biology girl, I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
Sort of tech support. And then there's newest member Sky, who was the rising tide person who's now joined the team. So that's sort of your...
It's sort of just like the questioning, S.H.I.E.L.D. and civil liberties and privacy and what, how great an effect does S.H.I.E.L.D. have on the world now and what we're doing, and do they have too much influence, and shouldn't they be a little bit more transparent in what they're doing? And she kind of bends pretty easily to joining them by the end. I mean, if we consider that she's like this one woman... conspiracy theory team truther living out of a van, and hacking into their systems. And at the end of this first hour, she's pretty much, the newest member on the team.
But I kind of got a feeling that she did this stuff that she did because she kind of wanted to be in the world. You know, she was for lack of a better term, she was a superhero groupie. I mean, she wasn't, but she was showing up, and she'd show up in cosplay at Stark Tower, which was a funny joke. And she seemed to be really just wanted to be in that world, and her way in was to, create this identity for herself on the internet. And
she wants to be part of the team, because she, privacy wouldn't be so much of an issue as long as she's in charge of it. She's part of the team. So.
I actually quite liked the cast. I thought they were pretty appealing and fun, except for, ironically, Grant Ward, who seems to be positioned as the main guy, next to Coulson. And I thought he was kind of bland.
It's sort of a thankless role, I think, because he's supposed to be like they give him that whole Paris escapade where there's fireplaces raising up and secret passageways and things, and it's a little bit sexy, a little bit international intrigue, and they give him that, but then he sort of turns into he's our eyes and ears, sort of he's the entry. Point
the
guy,
point, definitely,
and that used to be Coulson in the movies. Like that's Coulson in Iron Man 1.
Right,
he's coming in and he's sort of very unassuming, and he's the heart of the Avengers, and he's the reason that sort of the Avengers, go into action and really assemble.
He did it with a bit of a palm. Where I think this Grant Ward character is just kind of bland. You know what I mean?
No, I agree.
Coulson had a personality. He was funny. And that's not necessarily Ward's character. He's the big, strong, stoic type, which is fine. You definitely need one of those guys in your group. But, as a sort of a main anchor point, I wasn't really drawn to him. I couldn't even really tell you what he looks like. He's kind of a bland.
When you have an ensemble like this, it's also often the case that your central protagonist, your entry point character, is not nearly as interesting as those around him, because he's supposed to be the regular one. That's the problem with Buffy, right? You usually go back to, Buffy Summers is, I mean, although there's all that pathos and everything, like she's probably the least interesting person in that group until maybe Riley comes along. This guy's a total Riley.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's just the first episode. I'm giving him opportunity to grow and become interesting. But for me, watching it, I just felt like whenever he was the focus, I got kind of bored, and I was looking for the rest of the team to come back. Although when they did shoot him up with the tranquilizer, the truth serum, it was fun for a little while.
Yeah, it's fun.
I like overall. I really liked the cast. I thought they were appealing. I really liked Fitzsimmons. I liked Skye. I like the idea that Ming-Na Wen is playing the character who's sort of the reluctant veteran. You know, it's not it's usually the kind of role you'd see going to a man. You know, but
yes,
she's a woman, which is an interesting twist on it. I liked the cast. I did. Now let's talk about Coulson.
Talk about Coulson. Because in these promos leading up to this, you're like, wait a minute. Okay, well, first off, Coulson's in the show. Didn't he die? Wasn't he dead in the Avengers? And wasn't that like a really big deal? And that's why, you know, Iron Man's like, his name was Phil, and this is why we're going to, you know, kick your ass. And right. The blood on the trading cards. So what's going on with that? And then these promos come up where he says, like, I held my breath. Right. You know, and you're like, are they going to do that? And I was like, that's kind of ballsy, like to just sort of do a throwaway thing like that. But like it's not as simple as that.
Yeah. And so he first shows up. There's not really an explanation. Then he tells Agent Ward that he was dead for 40 seconds, and he came back. Obviously, and
he saw a light and
faked his death to inspire the Avengers, and now they sent him off to Tahiti to recoup, and now he's back. And then later on, we find out through the appearance by another Joss Whedon veteran whose name escapes me right now.
Ron Glass.
Ron Glass from, I know him from Barney Miller, but that's because I'm old.
I know him from Barney Miller, too.
Also from Firefly. That there's something more mysterious happening with Coulson's resurrection, and he and Maria Hill share some secret dialogue, not secret, but some dialogue about some secret goings on that
they're off in the wings and the shadows, and he's like, he'll never know. He must never know.
He should never know the truth, which means there's some sort of secret to why Coulson was resurrected or brought back. Or is he an LMD? Is he a clone? Is it some sort of magic? Did the Scarlet Witch do it? Who knows? But I wonder if that's going to be an ongoing thing, or they're just going to leave that for later, maybe for the films or something. But so there's some mystery to how Coulson came back. I don't know how much they're going to ask us to worry about that or not.
It seems really overt and kind of obtuse the way they do it. Like, it's very, I don't want to say it, but like, it's very comic booky.
Right.
Like, it's very mainstream superhero comic booky to have the cliffhanger and be like, but he, you know, it wasn't really a near death experience. It was closer to death than that, you know. And so I'm hopeful that Whedon has something a little bit more substantial up his sleeve, in that it's not as simple as all that. We're not gonna have, you know, a final scene like a, you know, a little coda with a room full of test tubes and bald Coulsons floating in them.
Although that'd be like, kind of awesome.
We've seen that like a million times. I'm hoping that it's something a little bit more novel, and that journey is kind of interesting. And just given Coulson's temperament, that's a really interesting guy. Like he's unassuming, but he's definitely very confident. And throwing that kind of wrench into it, how much of this is he aware of?
Right, he's confident
because it's pretty much a given that yes, he was dead, and he's been brought back, you know, through technology or, you know, some kind of supernatural occurrence. Is he in denial about that? How is this the first time it's even happened? So there's a lot of different avenues you can go down. A lot of familiar territory there that we've seen on a lot of shows similar to this. So I'm hopeful that, you know, Whedon recognizes that and says, let's try and do something a little bit different. And I don't know what that's going to be. And I shouldn't know what that's going to be. I don't want it to be predictable.
It was definitely interesting. I mean, I don't know, you know,
I like that it's not just like, oh, well, you know, that didn't count. You know, like,
although I kind of always respect when they do that in the comics, so I would have been fine with that in the TV show as well, because ultimately you really there's gonna be no completely satisfying answer to why this dead
but that's such
is alive again,
it's know? Such a pivotal moment in the movie that I don't want it to be cheapened, you know. And so anyway, so now all the, you know, Phil Coulson's gonna come back as Vision people, you might be right. I mean, it may be not be the way that, you know, we're used to, or the Vision that we're accustomed to after so many decades, but it might be something like that. This is the Marvel Studios answers to that Vision question.
So I think overall they've got a really appealing sort of base of characters here. I think it'd be fun if they could bring in Maria Hill after How I Met Your Mother ends, at least as a own recurring basis, because I think she brings a good dynamic to it.
She's sort of the Nick Fury.
Yeah.
In this, because we don't have Nick Fury, so
I think we could get like a Nick Fury one appearance this season. I think they could work that out.
I was wondering if they were going to pull it off, like they kept it secret for so long and just, you know.
But I don't know. It was interesting. It felt, even the tech, to get back to the earlier point about feeling different, yeah. Even the tech, like the base, the SHIELD headquarters felt different than the tech in the movie. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Like yeah.
It felt much more claustrophobic. And I understand why.
And they speak to that. I mean, they say we're using some of the 90s, you know, tech for, like, we don't have a helicarrier. We've got this airliner thing. And
right.
It's kind of cool that they have a plane and that you can go anywhere.
I like the idea of that. It's like very human target-ish.
And it's not exactly like the spaceships from Battlestar Galactica where they have like recliner chairs. it's not that low rent looking. I think it's very. I mean, and we're talking about sort of like archetypes in terms of, you know, what the Melinda May character is, and you know, the Fitzsimmons duo, like. That they're the anxious scientists and everything. But this is the pilot, and there's a lot that they have to, a lot of pipe that they have to lay down. And
things often change. Characters change over time. And
a lot of people have mentioned in their commentary of this pilot that, you know, a Joss Whedon pilot isn't always fantastic. It takes some time for these relationships to gel and people to get shuffled around. And it's not just true of a Whedon show, but any show. Like, you watch the beginning of, like, Community. Right. And that's a great pilot, but, like, it takes a while for those characters to become who they are. Like, Donald Glover's not, you know.
No, even the first season, he's a different character than he is.
He's definitely not Troy. And then, like, it takes a while for them to fit into their groove. So,
it's funny because people keep calling this a Joss Whedon show, and technically it is, but it isn't, as far as I know. You know, like he.
Well, there's been some murky stuff out there. Like there was that story that
the emergency rewrites.
The emergency rewrites, like they had to fly him in, and like he had to, you know, rewrite stuff on the spot, like from, you know, from scratch.
Right.
So he is involved.
He's involved, but he's not overseeing. It seems to me, and I don't know anything other than what I'm reading, is that it seems to be more like an Angel scenario where, mm-hmm. you know, he's created it, it's his characters, but he's off running something else, which is, he was off running, I think, Firefly at the time of Angel, or is it still Buffy?
Buffy, yeah.
So he would, you know, I'm sure he's available to consult and answer questions, but I feel like what I read from his interviews is that he's not hands-on on the show because he's hands-on doing, you know, Age of Ultron, so... You know, it is a Whedon show, but it seems to be more of a Jed Whedon show. So.
And I'm also curious as to how personal it could possibly be with, you know, Marvel and Disney involved. And, like, right. These properties are huge, and they have to be respectful of this IP, you right. know? You know, and so, you know, I don't know. You said, you know, we're probably not going to see them fighting, you know, Galactus or Kang or something every week. I would imagine that we're going to see them facing more of like the Marvel terror groups.
I would, you know, hope,
like,
so, but I also
the, like the Ames and the, rather than like, you know, the Mole Man coming out. I don't,
I was thinking
don't
about that
like
as I was
before.
Watching what they could, what they're going to end up doing. Cause you know, you don't want it to be I mean, some people do, but you don't, I think in general, you don't want it to be a Marvel Easter egg of the week show. But
like early Smallville. Well, early Smallville, they created a lot of their own villain.
That stuff didn't really come into Kryptonite later, a lot of it. But, you also, if I'm running Marvel Studios, I'm not going to allow these people to do anything with anybody who's any kind of major character, because I want to save those people for them.
Right, because this isn't just another iteration of the Marvel Universe. This is the same world, ostensibly, as the Thor movies. And
right, you want to save those people for the billion-dollar movie-generating movies.
Right.
Or even other shows. You know, you don't want to put Luke Cage in here if you think you can do a Luke Cage movie or TV show. You know what I mean? So, like, it's going to be a very fine line, and I'm sure they've got a list of characters that they're allowed to use, and they're probably
And you might be
all...
like, well, why don't you introduce Luke Cage here, and then you can put him in the movie? Well, I think you're going to get a bigger actor if they debut in the movie, and they're not going to be interested in doing the TV
I'm sure
show.
That the list of characters involves mostly C and D list characters, which is fine. I think that's fun to showcase those characters.
There's no shortage of them either. There's a bazillion, you know, fun, you know, C and D tier villains that they could play with. And
this is the place for Darkhawk to really shine. I'd like to see Darkhawk in this. I think they already announced one of the upcoming villains who's somebody I don't think I'd ever heard of before.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. I was like, who? I was like, okay.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be... I enjoyed it. I didn't super love it. Mm-hmm. There's certainly other pilots I've seen this season that I've liked more. But I definitely didn't dislike it, and I had fun watching it. I look forward to next week, so...
Yeah, in the review, I kind of say that it's sort of like they're bringing a bit of, like, Saturday morning, like, action adventure to prime time.
It's almost like a USA show. It's almost like that kind of show, which used to be a network show. That's what the networks used to do, is... sort of action adventure, 1 hour action adventure shows, which is cool because not every show I need to watch needs to be Breaking Bad and or, you know, some sort of darkly psychological take on something. This is, it's almost like Alias. It's almost like that kind of thing. I enjoy like a 1 hour weekly spy show with guys getting punched and, you know, charming cast members. So I think
it's funny. Fun. And then we did a whole Phil Coulson week on iFanboy back when Avengers came out. I think that character is just so charming and disarming.
Right.
And it's, you know, not the usual leading man.
No, he's very.
He does not have the hairline of the usual leading man. And there's something really refreshing about that. And
he's also very kind of clipped, and he's got a very distinct personality that is not your usual main character.
Yeah, and
I wonder if that's going to be something they can sustain over the course of this.
And it's not just it's not just a gag either. Like he's there's some depth here where he interacts with Maria Hill and says, like, you know, you should try Tahiti, you know, for a bit. And she says, you know, I'd last like 3 days and I'd want to get back in the field. And he's like, exactly. You could use that. It would be a good, you know, jump start for you. And then the interaction with Ming-Na in the birthplace of red tape, where he says you got to get back out there. Whatever happened, I mean, I'm very interested in that mystery as well. Like, what the hell happened that forced her? Because she's a very competent, you know, soldier. She's taken down the bad guys and stuff in this episode. What forced her into a desk job? And why was she so reticent to come back out? But and I like those two together, sort of like the mom and dad of this motley little group. I think it's got potential.
I found myself wondering about the cellist in Portland.
Yeah,
I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see.
Scarlet Witch, you play the cello.
I think, I don't necessarily need to see their private lives. I think it's kind of fun to stick with them as super agents, but I think it would be fun to explore Coulson's life a bit more, you know, see what he's like when he's not being Coulson 24/7, which he probably
is. That's interesting because, like, you know, we're so used to, like, the secret identity stuff, and these are, you know, agents and their whole life is sort of, you know, field operations. What do they do for... casual, good time, fun.
Well, they're going to be doing it with each other from the looks they're giving each other in the show. Mm. But I enjoyed it. It was fun. I didn't have major problems with it. The stuff that was problematic was just the transition from TV to film, which is expected. But
it ends with a Corvette turning into a flying car.
Which was awesome.
And that, I think, really sets the tone, hopefully, for the rest of the series, or it should. That this is what the show is going to be, that we're going to have flying cars. And Coulson is, you know, hip and square at the same time. And that's pretty cool.
Well, good news for everybody who enjoyed it was that it was a blockbuster in the ratings department.
Oh, good.
Not at all surprising. Although I was talking to somebody before it came out. I was like, I don't know what it's going to do. It could be a huge hit or it could be a giant flop, and I wouldn't be surprised either way. But it was a huge hit. It was the biggest network premiere in 4 years, drawing... you know, 11 million viewers, well, almost 12 million viewers, which is funny. 10 years ago, big hit would have been 30 million viewers.
Well, we'll see if it gets eclipsed by the Michael J. Fox show and the return of the bunk.
Yeah, so it's good news if you enjoyed it. It's probably going to stick around. You know, these days, a 4.6 in the demo for all those who follow ratings is like a gigantic number. So that's good. Good news. And as long as it doesn't drop off big time next week.
Yeah, we'll have to see what next week looks like.
We should be in for a couple years of Coulson running around, quipping and shooting. So I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to next week. You can go tell us what you thought of it by going to fanboy.com and commenting on the show under the podcast there. Or you can go check out Paul's 1,500-word review over at the Splash Page blog at MTV Geek. Comment there as well. So you can check that out every week. Paul will be doing that for MTV. And we're not going to be talking about the show every week, but if something else comes up but worth talking about, Paul and I will jump on the microphone and have a chat about it. until the next podcast, which will be the Pick of the Week show, and then next week a Booksplode show featuring a special guest talking about Batman Year 100. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And we'll see you next time.
So we'll see you at the movies.
I almost did that, and I realized we're not going to see you at the movies. See you at the little movies, which are now called TV.
I always get what I aim for, and your heart and soul is what I came for. Whatever Lola wants,
Lola wants,
Lola gets,
Lola gets.
Take off your coat, don't you know you can't wait?